Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. In this episode, we're going to be discussing TikTok's favorite horror movie, Skinamarink, which has just recently gotten a theatrical release after being leaked at some point last year and then just chopped up into 12-second clips for all the Zoomers to watch. Well, with the dance. Yeah, I had the same experience. I also saw it last night because my theater is only showing it at like 7:30 and 9:55. So Harumphing. So, a couple things about that. One, I also had some walkouts. I think the proportion of my walkouts to the committed was maybe higher than yours, it sounds like, because I had, you know, including me, it was maybe 20 people, maybe a little bit less. And basically, there was a back row of, again, fucking Zoomers, the group that apparently latched onto this movie on the TikToks. And first of all, they were a bunch of fucking chatterboxes. Well, fucking exactly. And finally, I got irritated enough by it that I very loudly shushed them. And then I heard like one suppressed giggle. I'm like, okay, that didn't accomplish anything. But then they were surprisingly quiet for another 10, 12 minutes. And then one group of them walked out, never to return. And then about 5 minutes later, so did another. And we were left with about 12 of us, one of whom, by the end of the movie, had just completely lost her shit. Like, she couldn't keep it together. Just a lot of weird yelping. The movie broke her, I guess. The other thing that was frustrating, I was reminded of this when you used the phrase, when the lights came up, because the lights came up in my screening like 5 or 6 minutes before the movie ended. Yeah. Right. And it's a testament to the quality of the film that the ending still hit pretty good in bright light. Yeah. Anyway, you used the term micro-budget earlier. I think it's staggering that this movie was made for $15,000 when that is exactly as much as they apparently spent on Paranormal Activity 13 years ago. So, that's Yeah, I mean, digestible. But yeah, so I mean that's like Paranormal Activity getting made for like, I don't know, 9 grand maybe, which is just nutso. Yeah, fair. Well, I just, Christ, I'm thinking about when I shot my short in LA. It didn't cost much less than that. So, hoo boy. But anyway, insofar as Skinamarink has a story, and as you say, it's borderline non-narrative, I would almost, it's borderline non-narrative, in that I would almost just strike the borderline. Yeah, I think so. And essentially, that framework is these two small children, a brother and sister, are in their house at night. And for the most part, they are alone. They have some spooky encounters with their parents, question mark, and maybe something else, almost definitely something else. And also, shit keeps disappearing. And some of that is just objects. But it's also like windows and doors and other things that are hard to make disappear. Well, I saw you respond to a tweet like yesterday, which for those of you listening to this after it's been posted, was the 14th of January, and somebody was like put up a poll, how many movies have you watched since the first of the year? And you responded, subtweeted it, 58. What the fuck is up with you, man? Damn. Wild. Quote unquote. Wild. Yeah. So I will sometimes make use of a surreptitious cell phone glance, and I will put it up against my torso and wake up the screen and just have it sliver open just so much that I can see what time it says. And I also like to check what time it is that a movie actually starts. And particularly in this case, I wanted to know, because for me, there was a very clear point where the movie started to get under my skin. And I want to be like, okay, the first X number of minutes, not so much. And it's, yeah, well, so the movie is, according to IMDb, it's 100 minutes, hour 40. And I would say the first 40 minutes, and I'll get into this more after the break, but the first 40 minutes, I'd say, are preamble that I was a bit more lukewarm on. What hubris. At any point. Well, no, no. I figured we would probably just recap the big set pieces and leave it at that. I think they're supposed to be 4 and 6. The boys 4, the girls 6. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's or you know, original series Star Trek was the touchstone I went for. It's like, na-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah. I think it is. You see, I'm gonna be honest, I missed the hand. I guess I was distracted by the crunching, slurping noises and the scream because, yeah. Right. Hell in the 90s. It's the girl's face. They're depressions, not cavities. Oh, Jesus. Kyle Edward. Or Darren Lynn Bousman. Right. So I think it's Kaylee and Kevin. Yeah. I Right. It's kind of a face. Staggering, staggering. Well, don't forget that the face, well, the face doesn't move, but the voice tells Kyle to, or Kevin, whatever the fuck his name is, to go to sleep. I don't think I'm going to drop that line. Yeah. Yeah. Or, wall corners or door frame corners or whatever. Yeah. There's, I think, actually, when the demon says, put the knife in your eye, I think that it might have been talking to the sister because there is a scream shortly thereafter that is not part of any of the jump scares that we've run down so far. And so it was kind of my take that the thing was telling the girl to do that, and she did that, and, well, surprise, surprise, it was very painful. Yeah. Yeah, it's Yeah. Well, it's just and this scene that plays out is just again, we see like a corner of a wall or whatever else like this movie always does, and there's a scream, but this one isn't very loud. It's more of a just a plaintive cry, and there's a little bit of spray and then just a gush of blood spatter. And then, yeah, it disappears in two stages. And then we hear the sound effect from the cartoon again. And it plays out. And I thought, because again, the fucking cartoon clip plays over and over again, at least a dozen times, a couple different times, I think. I was expecting, like, oh God, are we gonna have to watch this blood spray a dozen times? As it turns out, it's like four, which is unpleasant enough. We were definitely led to believe that it would be worse. Yeah.
In this house, in this house, in this house.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show. Well, and I'd find it hard to believe based on those first 40 minutes. Yeah. Like purely intellectual way. Like, Yeah, I didn't have the same beef with the face scare that you did, and my experience of it was basically the same in that I wasn't really expecting it, and I didn't expect it to come there. And then afterwards, I was just kind of, my heartbeat was permanently elevated thereafter. And it is exhausting to a certain degree, but also, as you said, kind of exquisite. And it's sort of impressive, particularly given that I, like you, 98% of the time now, watching a horror movie, am, pretty jaded. And like, I can appreciate a movie intellectually while coming out of it like, yeah, it didn't scare me. That's not going to keep me up at night or whatever. Or even just freak me out while I'm coming home immediately after the movie. It's just like, okay, that was a movie I watched and now it's done. Whereas this, I got home, not a lot of lights on in the house. It freaked me out. And it didn't bother me so much that Kyle Edward Ball played a little bit dirty with that scare, because in the end, he again elevated my heartbeat by 40 to 50% and sustained it for 45 minutes straight, more or less. So that was kind of impressive. Right. Have to figure out a different one. For the most part, I didn't particularly care for the cartoons. The one with the disappearing rabbit, the rabbit making itself disappear, waving one hand up from its feet and the other down from the top of its ears. It had utility, obviously, because it set up the thing later, but in and of itself, it wasn't spooky. I was feeling as I was. Particularly early on, and I got less of this when the movie had more going on and I was more freaked out by other stuff. But earlier on, I was worried that these cartoons were going to be this movie's tiptoe through the tulips, you know, where it's just like, oh, we've just arbitrarily decided that Tiny Tim is terrifying. It's like, no, James Wan, he's not. He's just kind of goofy. And I got the same initial reaction to the cartoons in this movie. Like, no, Kyle, these cartoons are not terrifying just because they're a little bit odd and they're so old. They're just a little bit odd and old. That's it. And again, once the movie had a little bit more going on, I had a little bit less hostile reaction to them. But early on, I was like, yeah, okay, this is. I get you're trying to create a very particular kind of atmosphere here, but it's just not really doing anything for me. Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. It was interesting, too, relative to the cartoons. And this only just occurred to me when you referred to the traditional day-night cycle. In this movie, it's almost as if the presence of the cartoons kind of establishes its own day-night cycle a little bit. I think, yeah. Right. Yeah, because it's not like the cartoons are playing when the boy goes up to his parents' bedroom, or when he encounters his sister without a face, or, God forbid, at the end when we see the sort of a face that the demon has. You know what the face reminded me of? In like elementary school, in the cafeteria, did you ever have those fried potato things that had a smiley face in them? They were like circular. That's exactly what it fucking looks like. I think that's three. The nun was two. Hellfest potato face was stupid. This potato face is horrifying. But yeah, that's exactly what the fucking thing looks like. So. Yeah. As far as the grain in the picture goes, I agree that more than anything else, in fact, felt to me like the director was not playing fair more than I felt like you did about the jump scare in the middle with the face. Because, like you, I'm looking at this swirling black static, like you say, it's just a bunch of ants moving around, and I keep trying to puzzle, is there something there? Is something gonna come out? Is something beginning to come out? And for the most part, no. I mean, that is where potato face, I guess. I'll adopt that term for now. That is how potato face kind of emerges. But beyond that, the other... No. But for the rest of the movie, that swirling pseudo-film grain never is used to mask or resolve into anything frightening. And, you know, okay, in one sense, it's admirable that Kyle Edward Ball understands few things are scarier than the stuff we conjure in our own heads, and giving us the space to do that makes a certain amount of sense. But the fact that it's so omnipresent, particularly for those first 40 minutes, that does whatever heavy lifting is being done, that felt like a little bit of a cop-out to me. On the other hand, I don't know what this movie would have been like, would have looked like, if it didn't have all that grain. It probably would have been worse, so I don't know that I can say less or get rid of it or whatever, but it did. I did have mixed feelings about that. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I have one more criticism. So, something that theoretically I would change if I didn't think it might destabilize the whole the whole thing. But I was somewhat frustrated with some of the sound, particularly with dialogue, but also with some of the jump scares. This feeds into some of what you took issue with the face jump scare, where we often say quiet, 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 bang, but this is like quiet, 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 a nuclear bomb going off, you know? And right. And so much of the rest of the movie is what you might call like ASMR horror, or just a lot of whispery, mumbly kind of stuff going on. Right. So that was a little bit irksome when there would be just these deafening bursts of sound. Again, in the case of the biggest one, I think given that it was instrumental in doing what the rest of the movie did to my heart rate, I forgive that one. There are a couple other ones where I'm just like, okay, ow. Right. weirder, yeah. And related to that, on a sound note, so periodically there are subtitles for what the kids or the parents slash parent doppelgangers or the demon, what they're saying, because most of the dialogue, whenever there is dialogue, and it's not that often, is some combination between a 1980s fast food drive-through speaker and, you know, the adults in a Peanuts cartoon. And yeah, so it's difficult to make out. And I get that you, sometimes you're not supposed to be able to make out what's being said, and they also don't have subtitles at those points, and that can be scary. But more often, I just wanted to know, because I feel like, particularly later in the movie, when creepier shit was going on, some of this dialogue that the kid was saying, feel like if I could have parsed it out, or they just put more subtitles in, it would have gotten under my skin a little bit further. So that's just, that was a choice, and it's a choice I didn't particularly care for. Yeah. Your body's volume buttons. Yeah. No. Sure. Right. So before I get on to my attempts at recommendations, it was funny, particularly during the first 40 minutes of Skinamarink, I thought at multiple points about how you referred to John Dielman, where it was durational cinema. Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking that Skinamarink, at least starting out, it was durational cinema. So between that and your recommendation, and also that you invoked Stan Brakhage earlier, I just want to share with you that in the Wikipedia article for Skinamarink, it cites a Fangoria interview with the director, where he cites the work of filmmakers Chantal Akerman, Stan Brakhage, Maya Deren, Stanley Kubrick, and David Lynch as influences on Skinamarink. No, but this is different because that's just some jerk off coming to their own conclusions, and you're sad that you came to the same conclusions. This is you correctly sussing out what the director has admitted were his influences. So I give you points for that, and I give myself half credit for thinking of durational cinema while I was watching it last night. But anyway, moving on to recommendations. This is not a recommendation, strictly speaking, but I did think of the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which is a bad movie, and this is why it's not a recommendation. But that had that same sort of, I think the term is analog horror thing going for it, where you're watching old videos, lots of grain, and there's just kind of spooky stuff going on. Poughkeepsie Tapes is much more straightforward, like home video, found footage, scary, violent stuff happening. And it's also bad, but I did think of that movie. And then I guess by extension, you could think about the first couple of VHS movies before they got kind of up their own ass or like focused on period detail rather than just like, these are some creepy things that are recorded on VHS tapes in some weirdo's abandoned house. So that concept kind of gels with Skinamarink's ethos, at least as I see it. And we're all going to the World's Fair. I mean, I'm not the first person to draw a line between these two. In fact, it's pretty common in critical appraisals of this film. But it's the same kind of birth from the internet, kids home alone with weird stuff and weird old stuff. And obviously, the age range is very different. The protagonist in We're All Going to the World's Fair is a teenager, and these are small children. But it's all kind of a piece, and it's all tapping into the same kind of fright. And we typically try to steer away from just recommending movies we've done on the podcast already. But given the fact that, as you said repeatedly, this movie is very singular, and also that I think the commonalities are so strong that I'm just going to go with it and have that be, I guess, my primary recommendation. And We're All Going to the World's Fair, while being very weird and out there and unusual, if Skinamarink is a little impenetrable for you, but you're almost there, you're going to fucking love We're All Going to the World's Fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be inclined to agree. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, the children may be trapped in that house, but we're not, so... Thank God we can same here. Until next time, I'm Jim Smith, and we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later. As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Skinamarink Official Trailer HD, a Shudder original, uploaded by Shudder. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, January 29th, and we will be discussing viral murderous doll sensation, Megan, or if you will, Mithrigan. See you then.